Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and I'm with my good friend John Harry Charan, and we are going to talk about the metaphysics of money. And in this discussion, we're going to continue our discussion about money, how to attract it, how to manifest wealth, and since money is energy in motion, a knowledge of the laws of money make it simple, but not always easy, to acquire more than enough for our needs. John, how are you doing today?
I am doing fine, Steve. Glad to be talking with you again.
Same here, and I always learn so much, and I'm looking forward to continuing our discussion about the metaphysics of money. So let's go ahead and jump right in and tell us a little bit more about money.
Okay, I'm glad we. You see, this and the last segment sort of run together, and there'll be a lot of good little things here people can pick up. Remember over the other sessions I was talking about stuff like practice, stuff like vision, stuff like feeling, and so forth that most people think are totally unrelated. Well, we'll see certain cases here where they come together, they tie in, it calls for a little practice. We don't make money, okay? If you want to make money, you better go work for the U.S. Mint. What we do is we earn money. We exchange service for another thing. Sometimes it's in the olden days, whenever that was. In the old times, it used to be what we call bartering. Somebody would exchange a shovel or a sword for maybe some food or a piece of the dinosaur or what just exchange things for things. Later on, service for money. And imagine how difficult it would be if every time I wanted something, let's say, like in the village, sometimes when somebody did something nice for somebody else, they would give them a chicken or coconuts. I mean, imagine what it would be. So money was, so to say, invented to make that exchange a lot simpler. The reason I went into what seems so obvious is, look, money is a medium of exchange where somebody does something and another person gets paid for doing that thing he did. It's really a medium, an energy medium, and it makes sure that when we give service, money will flow to us. Now, people look at it in one way and say, you know, but I have done this and I have done that and I don't have any money. I understand that. And many times you'll get the money from a place you don't expect. It's like you never have to worry about where it's coming from, because the minute you do that, the minute you start worrying about it, you put up a block, a fence. You close the door to it, because worries do not go in tune with money. I told you before, I said money is magical. I mean, M for me, O-N-E, one, and Y for you, M-O-N-E-Y. You and me, when we become one in an agreement, there is money, payment. There is a flow. The word currency comes from current, which means flow. Affluence, free flow. So money is a flowing thing. If you were to take all that you have and hide it away someplace, you have stopped the flow of money. So how do you go about getting it? I mean, think of a faucet with water flowing through, and you put your cup underneath, and you don't open the faucet. And you keep yelling at it, I need water. Give me some water. The only way you can activate, let's make up some words, the law of the faucet is by turning it on. And then the water flows. There's nothing magical about that. And the minute you have enough, it stops flowing. And there are mysterious things, mysterious energies about money. I want to tell you an old story. It's found, we're going to pick one of the Christian examples, or the example in the Old Testament, where you find lots of interesting stories that have to do with life, but nobody or most people do not know they ever exist. Long, long, long ago, there was a prophet called Elisha. By the way, anybody who wants to check this out, go to the book of 2 Kings in chapter 4. It's there. I remember when I read it the first time, like decades ago, or many, many, half a century ago, or whenever, I stopped and reread it again because it had a message for me which said, you know, there's a solution to this problem of money. Now, in those days, there was a prophet of God by the name of Elisha. And Elisha was coming into the city, And there was this woman who had two sons, and her husband had just recently died and had owed the moneylender a lot of money. And so now she has no chance of ever paying this money back. And into this town came the prophet, and they call him the man of God. And as the man of God came in, this woman went up to him and said, "Man of God, I need your help. Could you please help me? I am in trouble. My husband died. We owe so much money." And in those days, you didn't have Chapter 7 and Chapter 11 bankruptcy or anything. "We owe the moneylender so much money that he is going to send to take my two children, my two sons, away from me for the payment for the money I owed." Now, this is a terrible thing. Here's this woman. She has no money, absolutely none. Her husband obviously borrowed a lot of money and died, and so couldn't pay it back. And the man of God, the prophet, looked at her and said, "Okay, what do you want me to do for you? What do you have in the house?" He didn't even wait for her to answer. He seemed to know what he should do. So he said, "What do you have in the house?" That's like asking us today when we say we have no money, we have no resources, we have nothing. Somebody says, "But what talents do you have? What do you have in your house? Do you have anything?" So he said to the woman, he asked her, he said, "What do you have in the house?" Notice the answer. "I have nothing, my lord, except a small pot of oil." Oil then, like now, was very valuable, and all she had was this little small pot of oil. And the man of God said to her, "Okay," he probably said to himself, "that's all we need. A little seed, a little something to start this." He says, "Okay, send your sons out to the neighbors, borrow a lot of containers, borrow a lot of vessels and pots, and bring them into your house." Now, I'm sure the woman thought he was mad, but because she had such respect for who he was a legend, this guy Elisha. Because she respected and, the next thing, trusted it, the person, she sent her sons to get these pots. And the prophet said, "And when you bring the pots in, close the doors." Shut out the outside was what he was saying. "Close the doors, and you and your sons start pouring the little oil that you have into the pots." She probably thought, now he's mad for sure. But she followed what he said. And when they got all the pots they wanted, she closed the door behind her and her sons, and they started filling the pots. And the narrative says the oil kept running until all the pots were filled. When they looked around for more pots, one son said, "We don't have any more." And that's the point at which the oil stopped flowing. Now, this woman, I don't think they gave her name, came back out and went to the prophet, and he looked at her and said, "Now, go sell the oil, pay your debts, and you and your sons use the rest of it to live on comfortably." He didn't even give her a penny. He didn't give her anything except one thing, a little bit of advice. And he said to her, "You know, just go do this." And she believed it, she did. And here's the magic. How many times when we're after money, we keep thinking, this one is looking to get something from us. That one is looking to do this to us. I'll never get this. If that woman had said that, she probably would never have gotten anything. And since oil in those days was money, was currency, she had enough to sell and pay this guy just because of the one question, which she almost blew, which is, "What do you have in the house?" And most of us, when asked that question, "Well, you're broke, you don't have any money. What do you have, John? Anything do you have?" And we do not look in our house, which symbolically means within ourselves, within our heads, within our souls, within our hearts, sometimes within our house. But what do you have? Do you have a talent? Do you have something that you could exchange for something else? Or do you have faith? Do you have belief? Do you have trust? I think this is a great story. And again, I'll repeat where it's written. In the second books of Kings, chapter 4. And it will do everybody good to read that story. It's simple. If you blink, you will miss it. but there it is for those who are searching. It's a story about wealth, handling it, getting it in another way, but using what you have in your house, your talents. For example, Steve, you have such tremendous talents in hypnotherapy and in everything you do. And by putting those together, by using them, they make you prosper.
That's very well put, John. Very well put. Thank you so much for that. You know, as you were talking, and as you were talking about the biblical reference to, you know, looking for what you do have and so forth, and putting it into perspective for us in the modern day, I was, for some reason, taken back to my college days at the University of Florida, mm-hmm. where there were a few times when I needed to put gas in my 1984 Nissan Sentra, the first car I ever got. Four-cylinder stick shift. It was used, and I needed to put gas in it, and I didn't have the money that I needed, at least not with me. I wasn't much of a planner in those days, and so I'd find some spare change, sometimes under the seat or wherever. I'd find some change, and I put together the money to buy the gas. You know, it's interesting when I saw myself at that point, though I was thinking positively and so forth, I never really envisioned at that point in my life when I had just started college, and I was 17 when I started, I had never really envisioned myself being highly successful. I never really envisioned the internet didn't even exist then. So there are a lot of things that weren't around then, and I wasn't even thinking of. Can you talk a little bit to people who find themselves in that situation? Because we all do from time to time, no matter how far we are along in life, we have difficulty envisioning how much better it's going to get. And I feel that if we can hold on to that, we can do better now, because we'll have that peace of mind, that faith that the future is going to bring us something wonderful if we stay on the path.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I like that story because most of us have gone through situations like that. Now, the first thing that happens when you come up with a situation like that is there's fear. You're afraid. For example, if you didn't have any money or little change to get some gas, you had to go to plan B and then plan C and plan D. And by the time you get to plan X, Y, Z, that includes walking or hitching a ride or something. So we are overcome by fear. That's the initial thing. When a bill comes and there isn't enough money in the account or wherever to pay that bill, the first reaction is fear. When something breaks and it's got to be fixed and it wasn't in the budget, the first reaction is, why did it have to happen now? As if you think, well, couldn't it have waited until maybe 3 months from now then happened? Or couldn't it have happened to my neighbor? And all kinds of crazy, silly thoughts go through our minds, which really use up a lot of energy or a lot of capital, mind capital, if you will. So the first thing to do when you come upon one of those situations is this, to deal with the fear, to deal with fear. Because, pardon the expression, fear is frightening. That was meant as a joke anyway. But to deal with fear, how do I handle it so I calm myself down? Because if I don't do that, I will never solve this problem. And I don't care whether somebody's asking for maybe $10 or enough for gasoline for the car, or somebody is asking for $100 or $1,000 or $100,000 or millions. The same force, as we have said before, that can provide you $1,000 can provide you $1,000,000. If you do have $1,000,000 consciousness, if you're able to believe in the question you asked me about, envision or feel, I tend to want to go with the word feel. If you feel you are worthy of it, you will be led to take action that will bring this to you. Perhaps that woman we talked about who approached the prophet Elijah from the Old Testament, perhaps she was quiet, crying in the corner, got calm, and somebody said, "The holy man is coming into town." And something within her calmed her down and said, "Go talk to him." Many people would have been afraid to go speak to him in those days. But something got her to run out of her house, went right up to him, and said, "Man of God, here is my problem. Can you help me?" So she asked, How do we ask the faucet for water? By turning the handle. She asked the universe for help by going to that man. There's an old saying, I learned it from a man many, many, many years ago, and I never forgot it. I was in my teens, perhaps 15, when I heard him say on a bus, go to God first, and then to man, as God dictates. And you can substitute the word God with the universe or your higher self or whatever it is. No one minds. And so what you have to do is start feeling and knowing, develop a knowing that there is a solution to this. I just am not looking at it right now, but it exists concurrently with the problem. And then we take action. We do something. I always talk about that. I talk about practice. I talk about doing things. Take action. Do whatever you can with what you have. Here's a little story again about this guy who every day he'd go to church, and in the evening he'd pray and pray to God, dear God, please let me win the lottery. Lord, I want to win the lottery. I must win the lottery. And day after day he goes into this giant church and he prays to win the lottery. Finally, one day, maybe a few weeks later, a few months later, he goes in again and he starts, dear God, please help me. Please let me win the lottery. I want to win the lottery so badly. And all of a sudden, there was a strange stillness in the church. The candles, which were fluttering back and forth, stood still. Everything was calm and still. And from behind the altar, this giant, loving voice boomed out and it said, give me a break, Jake. Buy a ticket. Well, the point of that is, if we want to win the lottery, we got to do something. We got to buy a ticket. Now we can say, oh, I'm way above that. I could sit here and just manifest this wealth. Well, I would suggest that there are certain things to do. Again, when you plant a seed, and of course there are exceptions to all of this, and I've seen some of them in my lifetime, you have to go through a process. It takes a little time to get that seed to grow. So if you want to win the lottery, you buy a ticket. I'm not saying go win the lottery. This is just a story to illustrate, to just show what happens. You've got to take action. And many people would be in the position of that woman and her two sons who owe money to the lender, which could be a credit card or could be a banker or could be, it doesn't matter who. And you're scared to death because the money isn't there. But you get more and more scared if you start focusing on what you're afraid of instead of sitting back quietly. This is the first thing, the very first thing to do. Sit back quietly. Stop. Disconnect. Just for a minute, assume you don't have this problem. Because again, the subconscious doesn't deal with time. It deals with repetition and it deals with very strong feelings. It's not going to worry about, is that 4 hours or 8 hours or 16 hours? I don't think it knows about those things. Because to it, it's an infinity of hours. It's existing and it doesn't matter past, present or future. So we just sit quietly. This is one of the most constructive things someone can do. Sit quietly, even though you're shaking and sweating and scared, and start breathing in and out slowly. I'm not talking about yogi practices. Those are wonderful things. I'm not talking about any special way. Just start slowing your breath down. Just slowing it down and breathe in slowly and let it out slowly. And that in itself has a physiological effect on the body. And then you start getting a little calmer. The fear is still there, but not as bad as when you're thrashing around trying to find a way. Just to compare it, look, if you're a swimmer and you know how to swim, and you are all of a sudden in a deep body of water, let's say in a lake, and you can't feel the bottom of the lake, and you forget that you can swim, it's just as good as not knowing that you can swim. And if you start thrashing around out of fear, you certainly are not going to remember what to do naturally and how to swim, and you'll drown. And the same thing exists in this. So if you want to get it done, if you want to be successful with it, remember, give me a break, Jake. Buy a ticket if you want to win the lottery.
Very well put, John. I love the way you put things. I believe you could be the Dr. Phil of the metaphysical world.
Thank you. Thank you.
These succinct sayings that you have that cut right to the heart of the matter, I just love them. So thank you for that. The thing that comes to mind now when you're talking, that just when you were just saying that last bit of wisdom, was a story that happened to me a few years back when I had my office in Los Angeles, and I was just opening an office in Beverly Hills as a hypnotherapist, and I was still charging $50 a session. This was for a 2-hour session, $50. A lot of people know now my price is substantially more, but this was probably about 10 years ago, and I was on the phone with another hypnotherapist who said, "Why don't you raise it to $250?" This is for a 2-hour session. And I thought she was crazy. I argued with her for an hour. I went to her office and I said, "You've got to be kidding me." And I had all my reasons for sticking to my $50 price. And since then, I've increased it even more. But making that initial leap, I thought she was crazy. I would lose my clients. I would turn people away. I would starve. I would go broke. It wouldn't work out. I had to take a leap of faith. I did it. The next person who called was a movie star. He asked me how much. I said 250. He said, "When can I come in?" And I feel that if I had been charging $50, I probably would have scared him away. He probably would have thought that's way too cheap for 2 hours, especially at an office in Beverly Hills. But my point is that I had to take a leap of faith, and I had to accept that I was worth more than I thought I was. And I want you to talk a little bit about that, if you would, about people. We don't always have the flexibility in jobs. People have to kind of petition a boss to ask for a raise. But in business, we often have the capability of raising our rates, and we get afraid to do that. Or we have the option to change careers, become something completely different, but we get afraid to do it because we don't think it'll work out, even though our friends are encouraging us. Can you speak to that?
Yes, it's going back to what I said earlier about the fear is the first thing, and the fear comes from, okay, I like the one that you just explained there about the fees. The fear comes to from the part of, well, I can't charge $200. What does that really mean? It means that you do not believe that you're worth $200 for that consultation or that session. And the same thing happened to me too, Steve, when I started doing, to this day, I stopped for a few years. Then I went back into it because a lot of people are helped by it. And I do private consultations. And I remember when I started about a quarter of a century ago, I used to do, I think, $50 for 1 full hour. And people used to come in and talk to me about their things. And then I got to the point where I moved it for to $75 for for a full hour, and they still came. And then one day I started doing it by phone, and I kept it at $75 for a full hour, and there were always enough clients. And a few friends said to me, "You know, what you do is so valuable. Why don't you charge a little bit more?" Notice my hesitation, exactly like you. "Oh, it's okay now. I'm getting clients. If I charge a little bit more, maybe I'd lose the clients." It's because I didn't have total confidence in who I was. I just thought people are coming and they'll pay this money and they expect to have this. I wasn't looking at the value of what I did. And so I undersold myself until it got to the point where I said, "You know, here's a drastic change. $75 for half an hour. That's almost like doubling the price." And guess what happened? I didn't lose any client. They could all afford to pay that. And I started getting more. And over the years, I went to $100 for half an hour. And then now my fees, I keep it deliberately low because this isn't what I do as a full-time thing. I just do this to help people because I've done it for so long. And so I moved it to a point where anyone could actually be able to pay me for what I charge these days. And I have this little thing, policy, where if somebody can't afford to pay me for whatever reason, I do it for them anyway. And most people have paid over the years. That's because now, compared to then when I just started, it is just like you, Steve, where you thought, "Well, you know, I don't trust it too much." It was really fear. It was really fear. But after you started doing it and you started feeling that, you know, I'm worthy of this, as it says in the Old Testament, the worker is worthy of his hire. It means you deserve to be paid for what you're doing. And so by getting to the point, and notice again some of the words coming back, the divine don't give a damn attitude, this is what I do, this is what I charge, and these people who need your services will be drawn to you. As to how that happens, I don't think it's any of our business, because I don't think it's any of my business that gravity works for me all the time. I don't worry about, oh, gee, tomorrow morning, I wonder if I get up and I'm not up, my head is down, and I'm floating in the air. That would be a kind of an exception, and I'm sure there are different situations in science or in outer space where that happens. But I'm not in outer space, I'm at home, and these are the laws that work. So if we remove the fear and we start looking forward, generating a little excitement, we can generate excitement anytime we want. It's not something that just happens to us, you know. We got to practice. Remember the words about practicing? I kept talking about doing it over and over again until it becomes a habit. And then you get really good at what you're doing, and people will pay you a lot, whether it be money or chickens or goats or whatever it is in whatever currency. They will pay you a lot just for your expertise if you trust it. Because if you don't trust it, nobody's going to trust you. You have to trust it yourself. And the great concert maestro in Europe, Paderewski, I think was his name. He used to wow the audiences all over with his beautiful music and his playing. I think it was the violin. I don't remember what he played, but whatever it was so beautiful. And princesses and princes and queens and kings and the nobles used to come and listen to him play. And one day, one of the royal members of the royal family in Europe came up to him and said, Maestro, you are a genius. And he looked at her and said, Your Highness, yes, I am. But before I was a genius, I was a clod. What got him to where he was and gave him all the confidence was a lot of practice. Today we talk about doing things and we said, I tried that and it didn't work. We get very few refunds on my power pause that has been selling for 10 years that gives 3 steps in 3 minutes to solve problems. But once in a while I get one. I get somebody who asks for a refund, and we cheerfully give it to them. Let me correct that. I don't remember ever giving a refund cheerfully. I just give it because, you know, that was the promise I made. If you don't like it, you know, you get your money back. So this one time, and I remember this a few years ago, this person had a lot of problems, and he dropped me a note. He says, I just bought your power pause about an hour ago. I have so many problems. I hope this will solve them for me. And the next day he wrote me and he said, well, I read your power pause and I still have those problems. But I want to talk more about that later.
John, I'm enjoying the fascinating way that you break this down for us and just put it in our laps and you say, here it is and it's ours for the taking. So I'm looking forward to that too. And I'm looking forward to getting into a lot more information about the metaphysics of money.
Yes, certainly.